Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The Portland Trailblazers pick up a few wins before the end of the year, but more importantly, Scoot Henderson is on the rise, and that's all we care about. And with a couple injuries here and there, looking ahead at the 7-game road trip on the Blazer Focus Podcast, I am Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian and Oregon Live, along with Craig Burnback. Craig, the Blazers just started a 7-game trip. It's probably going to get ugly, but we're trying to be positive.
Got a little ugly already.
Got blown out by the Suns, but you know they've got injury issues again. But you know. Yep. At least Scoot Henderson is showing signs of life. But first, before we get to Scoot, what did you glean from this team when they won 3 out of 6? Because they had lost 8 in a row, I think. Then they won 3 out of 6. They beat the Kings and the Suns. We talked about those games before, but you know the San Antonio series, they showed some signs here and there. Like, did you get anything out of that little run? Aside from Scoot,
why are you trying to sucker me in to talk about wins and losses when like we
well, it's not
we committed
it's not,
to the fact that these no, won't matter.
I know, but when they beat playoff teams, when they play better basketball over a stretch, they're demonstrating some signs of growth, or it's just fluky basketball because the NBA is crazy, right? So that's what I'm sort of asking. Like, did you see some things that impressed you during that run?
No,
okay.
Oh, I mean, some things that impressed me, but more things of. This is the NBA. You're not going to lose 82, you know, and the Spurs, you know, back to back was classic, right? I mean, you lose to the Spurs, you get blown out at home by the Spurs with Wemby. And then, and yet you kept sneaking almost back in the game, right? Oh, they were down like 34-6, and then they're within 11, and then they lost by 13. And then the next night, when San Antonio sits Wemby and basically plays a G League team against you, you start blowing them out, and somehow they got within 6 at the end, right? But
right.
Just because it was two bad teams playing basketball, you know, the Kings win was the best. That was the best win of the season. I mean, I think that was clear, and it was good to have. Something I like that, because again, there's only so much that an athlete, a professional athlete who's used to being successful, can take as far as losing, because then it becomes habitual and then you're the Pistons, right? But no, I mean, because you beat the Spurs, you're like, yay, and then you play the Suns at Phoenix without Kevin Durant. And you basically play 3 horrific quarters. Your first quarter was really good, and then 3 horrific quarters. So, again, I'm not trying to get caught up in the too much of the wins and losses roller coaster, unless we see something like when you win 4 out of 5, or if they came back on this trip and they won. Winning record, I'd be like, oh, wait a minute, maybe I misvalue it. You know, maybe I don't know what I'm talking about with this team, and they are going to be better than I thought.
So here's why I'm just okay. They lost 8 in a row, like I said. They get some people back. They've won 3 out of 6, but they've had a bunch of people out again. In that stretch for the most of it, especially that Sacramento game, you saw some glimpses of what. This team could look like when they're close to whole. And then Ant gets sick. Ayton goes out. Now Kamara went out. Sharp was out. Like, they can't get everything together. So, yeah, you're right. We're not.
Tumani was out.
What'd I say?
No, I don't know. I just threw it in there.
No.
Did you say that?
I thought I said Kamara. Anyway,
You did. You probably
right. So yeah, it's not about wins and losses in terms of can they get back in the race or anything like that. But when they go out and play well enough as a group to win, and they do it against winning teams, you know, they're showing some things defensively, obviously, in those situations. But yeah, you can rack it up. It's just being the NBA, being the NBA. But when you win 3 out of 6 after losing 8 in a row, you're probably showing some signs of life that I think we're trying to capture in evaluating this team. And then they go and they get blown out by the Suns, and it's like, okay, but again, you were missing 3 starters, so it's really, really difficult to get much out of that either way, unless they had played well, and they didn't. So it is what it is. I agree with you that they're not going to go 0-82, therefore some of these wins are just product of the NBA. But I do think that we're continuously seeing signs here and there of growth in certain players, growth in depth, and the mentality that they're trying to create where they don't quit and they're playing hard on defense. And those are the types of culture setters that can lead to promising things in the future, which is why I'm trying to grasp onto something here and say they're showing some signs of that, and they did so by winning 3 out of 6.
I'll give you that. I mean, again, you lost to the Spurs at home. Like, you got blown out.
But
by
you,
the Spurs,
but you were, but you,
a 4-win team.
I know.
Like, that was bad, right?
I know, but
that's bad.
I know it's bad, but you, hold on a second. Weren't they, did Ant play in that game?
Yeah. No.
Yeah, Ant, but the first
who
one.
Who played for the Spurs? You know, like, as okay, I so, say, like,
no, but you're missing 3 of your top 5 players.
Sure, but
you're starting Moses Brown
to a 4-win team at home.
But you're starting,
like, I don't care. Like, that was bad. But and the guys that you want to see play well did not play well, right? So that's what I mean. I'm just not getting. I'm going to look at the positives and hope that that means something for the future. But if you're being honest, then you got to do the same thing with the negatives, right? And say, yeah, okay, maybe not, right? We're gonna concentrate on the positives, because that's what you have to do when you know that the team that you're talking about is going to win between 25 and 30 games. So, but you know, some of it is, to me, like when Brogdon or Grant go off, I just don't get that excited, because I'm like, so what? You know, like, I don't see that as mattering long term, as opposed to when I see Scoot make like a no look, get hit in the face pass, you know, for a beautiful layup. Then I'm like, oh, okay, there you go. Right. I don't care if Brogdon hits a 3, like, good for him. But how's he, you know, but I'm like, how's that going to help in 4 years? Right. Like, I don't see it helping. So that's kind of how I evaluate. And that, to me, sometimes when they win games, it's often some of the vets are stepping up and playing, you know, well, in times when they need to win, right? So when you beat the Kings and I look at that win, I say, okay, well, why did you win and why does it matter to me? And it doesn't always add up to being what I care about with the positives, just because, again, I'm not trying to evaluate whether or not Brogdon gets 19 points. Like, in that game and shows up big. I was pumped that Reith had 25. Like, that's crazy to me. Like, that's where my excitement was. And then he got hurt. Like, what right. the heck? So I was about to buy the Reith jersey and then the man's back hurt. So does that make sense? Like, I'm not getting excited. You beat the Kings, best win of the year. Simons had 29. I already know he's good. And Brogdon had 19. I already know he's good. So I'm not pumped,
but you got like you just you said, know, Reith got, game, you just said Reith
but Scoot had 17 Scoot had, and Scoot looked great.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Scoot, you just mentioned Reith for high 25. Scoot had 17 awesome. And 11, and Jabari Walker came off the bench for 17 and 6. And they played some great
defense. Yep, those are the things. That's what I'm trying to say. That's my evaluation. If they would have lost that game 115 to 113, and it would have been. Obviously, you can't have the same stats, but the same kind of stat line, I would have been just, I guess I wouldn't be, the win wouldn't have mattered to me as much as the performances by the younger people. Does that make sense?
I hear you.
Like, okay. They won 130 to 113, and they just, when they usually folded, they didn't, and the Kings did. So I appreciated that, but I don't appreciate, you know, that getting excited about statistics in games when you're down by 20. Same kind of thing. Because right. I'm like, well, if it's competitive, it matters. And that game was competitive and the numbers were good.
All right. So let's talk about some of these young cats then. Let's start with Scoot. Scoot Henderson in 10 games leading up to this game against the Suns, shot 43% on threes. Still a lot of turnovers, only shooting 39% from the field. His assists have been up. He's had 2 11 assist games. Clearly looking more confident. Clearly looking like he knows what he's doing. Still has moments where he looks like a 19-year-old rookie, but he's getting to his spots differently. He's shooting with more confidence. Chauncey Billups talked, you know, the other day about how, you know, he's enjoying watching his ascension and how the game's slowing down for him. He's not as rushed. And that win against the Spurs, you know, one of the key reasons why is because he kept everything on schedule with 11 assists. He had 6 in the second quarter when they really turned things up defensively as well and sort of took control of that game. So clearly his best stretch of the season. So regardless of the wins and losses he impacted, what's been your evaluation of Mr. Henderson lately?
Well, he's playing. You know, he's playing 35 minutes a game, you know, about. And so you're seeing more, which I appreciate. Again, I'm looking at the moments because when you do look at the stats, I just happen to glance at the stats like the win and the loss against the Spurs. The loss, he had 25 points. In the win, he had 22. Now, in the loss, he only had 4 assists and he had 6 turnovers. In the win, he had 11 assists and 4 turnovers. In both games, he shot almost identical, 8 for 23 in the loss and 9 for 21 in the win, right? Like, they're not, neither one's remarkably great. He made they're the better in obviously in the win. But yeah, I just, the moments is what I'm enjoying. I'm enjoying him on the break and showing that strength and that speed. And God, he can finish at the rim with some creativity. Now sometimes he's creatively misses. Or gets blocked because he still hasn't figured out, you know, how to play in the NBA. That the guys that are really good and know how to do it. But yeah, he's played better. And the question becomes, when Simons gets back, like, do you want to cut his minutes back down to 20, or do you want to keep him above 30? I mean, where are you on that?
well, I mean, If he's, you, I don't know. If you get him more minutes off the bench, that's fine. Then they're probably going to come from Brogdon. If you're still, you know, it's committed to development, obviously. But you're trying to showcase Brogdon a little bit because you're probably trying to trade him. As a matter of fact, they are trying to trade him. You know, you could start Sharp at the three, but you kind of like Kamara there. So you just commit to bringing Scoot off the bench and start. Commit to bringing Sharp off the bench and start Scoot, or just keep Scoot coming off the bench but increase his minutes. I mean, there's all sorts of different ways it could go. But you know what? We may not have to worry about that because they may not all ever be healthy at the same time.
There you go.
Right. So,
right. I mean, there's so that, right? Bother. Yeah. But
the trade deadline is in, what, a month and a half? Or is it a month? So,
just a month. Yeah, January.
So, Brogdon could be gone in a matter of weeks anyway. So then that clears everything up and you don't have to worry about it as much. But I'm trying to get Brogdon minutes unless I know what his trade value already is. And I know what teams are interested in, and then I don't have to worry about that. So I'm going back to.
Yeah, I don't think you have to worry about that. I mean, this is a guy, sixth man of the year last year. You know, I mean, I think that everyone would understand. I think you're at more risk of him getting hurt and losing his value than you are.
That would be
so I wouldn't play. I mean, I would play him less, but I don't know how you play him and play him less. That's the hard part. Like, how do you cut Brogdon's minutes?
February 8th is a trade deadline. So you're looking at a month.
Yeah, I guess that you're right. Long term, who cares? He's 19. Continue this and then eventually get him back up to 30 some odd minutes.
Yeah.
But I just, there's going to be that stretch here. If Simon, you know, when Simons gets back from the illness and there, you got the four of them again, because luckily Sharp is back, that he's going to go back down to like 23 minutes rather than 37 minutes. And then it's harder for Scoot to, you know, to shine. And And I don't care what Billups says. We've seen it. When the games are close, he's playing Brogdon in the fourth. You know what I mean? And right. I get it. It's hard not to. So that's the part that, yeah, I'd like to hit the fast forward button to when they've traded Brogdon. And I can't imagine that they're not going to. It doesn't make a lot of sense to not trade him, especially when you've seen that Scoot is doing more with more minutes. You know, when Simons gets back, we just fall back into that thing where we know that Simons and Scoot are two lead guards. So what happens there? And then we get into that messy future of the franchise stuff that is going to be a constant until it gets worked out.
All right. Before we get to this road trip, let's talk about the other youngins, which Billups likes calling them the youngins. Jabari Walker had a career high the other night. Abu Baji had just rejected Zach Collins a couple times. Moses Brown got a start, had 11 rebounds in 14 minutes. And then Duop Reith came off the bench behind him when he had his career high 25, but then he got hurt after that. So there's been some nice signs by some of the youngsters aside from Kamara and Henderson. Anything takeaways from those cats?
So great stories, right? Like they're Duop Reith, that story is just amazing. The guy wouldn't give up playing in Lebanon and just kept trying. And he gets to be in the NBA game and score 25 points. I don't know what his future holds, but that's just a great story and something to cheer for. I mean, the guy shot 9 for 15. I mean, he was plus 24 in an NBA game. Like, who thought? No one knew who that guy was. And he scored 25 points. That's awesome to me. And the Baji story also great. I mean, we know why he's played very little basketball for a guy who's in the NBA. Got in 2 minutes against the Kings, and you thought, well, we'll probably not see him play. He'll be back with the remix, and because Reed's hurt and Ayton's hurt, there he is in a game, messing up in front of everybody and getting dunked on, and then blocking shots. And I love there was a point where he went up to block a shot last night. And he fouled the guy. And he was kind of complaining. And Walker came over and was like, you could see he was like, dude, you got to go straight up. You know, like, you got to go straight up. Don't try to block it. This is NBA. Like, you're not going to block everything. Go straight up. And I love seeing that because you think, wow, Walker's talking like a vet.
Right.
And I love how Walker's playing. I mean, just amazing energy. He can flat out rebound. You know, no surprise who his dad was and had a career in the NBA for doing little things. And again, you know, he's scoring points on a roster where there aren't scorers necessarily out there. And I think it's great to see him be able to develop that. But he's an NBA rotation player. You know what I mean? Like that we know, and he could be your eighth guy. And if he's your star, if he's your worst starter, you know, not terrible, you know, like, and he's getting better. So I think Walker long-term is the best, part of what we're seeing
from the bench mob
in the locker room and after.
You mean
I got to imagine it's kind of fun covering these guys in the locker room after, you know, because the joy that they have to be expressing has to be really a cool energy on a team with where wins aren't going to give you that, right?
Yeah, in part, you know, you're hoping someone shines, one of the youngsters shine in some of these blowout losses or losses in general, or especially in the wins, because, yeah, there's a lot of guys on this team who are trying to make their way in the NBA coming from, you know, unenviable situations, counting Kamara, who's a second-round pick, right? Late second-round pick. Jabari, second-round pick. Moses Brown kind of becoming a journeyman. And they've all delivered moments, you know, and the vets are always happy for them. And there'll be some teasing back and forth where someone gets a lot of attention from the media one night. It's kind of cute. It's a pretty young locker room. And then the vets, you know, like Grant and Matisse are just so laid back and chill and Ant, right? So it's not an intense place at all. And yeah, everyone's pulling for each other. And there's a lot of good stories and young players trying to make their way in their league. And, you know, if your Blazers moving forward and you're trying to build a winner, you got to hit on some of these, right, second round picks. And right now, I don't see Walker and Kamara
right now as starters on a winning team. But I definitely can see where both can contribute and play on a winning team because they're giving you energy, they're giving you defense, and they're both just starting out. So they're going to keep getting smarter as they gain experience, and they're not going to be negatives. And they're going to go out there and they're going to piss people off because they're going to be nuisances and they're going to give you all the dirty work that you need. And then when they're called upon, they can finish and they're developing their shots and things like that. So yeah, those are two really good gets. And we'll see how Ryan Rupert develops. He hasn't really played much with the NBA teams, mostly with the G League team. And then Reith is 27. It'll be interesting to see what happens with him, you know, down the road. Do they keep him? Is he, you know, is he the third center? To me, if he's your third center, you're in pretty damn good shape. True backup, I don't know. Potentially, we'll see. But they've definitely done a good job of corralling some young cats to sort of see how they develop, no doubt about that. All right. I know you don't care about wins and losses. What are you hoping to see on this road trip? Because they're about to lose every game probably, except for maybe one. You got Dallas twice.
Right, there are no wins. There's no wins when you look at it, right? You're not like, oh, that's the win.
Well, they go to Dallas twice, then they got the Knicks in Brooklyn, and then they go OKC in Minnesota. And that's after they just got blown out by the Suns. Yeah.
I mean, I think that it'll be rare when they're – I don't know if there's a game there that they're not 10, you know, double-figure underdogs, right? I mean, so I don't know, the back-to-back in Dallas, I want to see how they can react because, you know, it's hard for NBA teams to play back-to-backs and there might be players that take off.
Well, there's a day off between.
There's a day off between.
Yeah, okay. It's two games in Dallas, but they have a day off.
We'll see how they play them. I mean, I think, you know, I don't know how Kevin Durant's hamstring was. I don't know. Like, maybe he really did tweak it in the game that he never came out of, right? But, like, NBA teams are going to start doing that, right? They're going to look at the Blazers and they're going to say, you know what? We're going to win this one without.
Are you calling them a load? Are you calling them a prime load management opponent?
I'm saying, I don't know. Like, we'll see if he plays in the next game. It seems rather suspicious that he didn't come out of the last game and then he did play in this game and then he played in the other game. So there'll be opportunities there for, maybe rosters that are not at full strength, but I guess what I'm looking to see again is effort and the young players and how they react to. So last night they didn't react well to being up, you know, after a first quarter playing really well. They did not react well when Phoenix said, "Oh, I guess we'll have to play tonight," and there was no pushback. And it is rare for this team, even though they have so few wins, it is rare for them to show nothing. They often show nothing in the first quarter and then work their way back for three quarters. And that's better than starting off hot and then finishing the way they did. So, but I mean, they could play a great game and lose by 12 to Dallas, right? Like, and we'll know it. Or they could play a terrible game and lose by 12 at Dallas because they were really down 28. And then it gets mixed, you know, things get mixed up. But how they defend superstars has been interesting to me, especially when Kamara's healthy, because like you said, Kamara's been going there and annoying people. And so I'm interested to see how they handle that. But, I mean, what do you think? 1-6? Like, what do you honestly think? I mean, they got to win one. Usually, losing seven on the road, like that, how would that not be disheartening?
Yeah.
If you lose seven, all of them.
So the fact that they beat the Kings at home and they beat the Suns at home when they won 3 out of 6, right? That shows right there that stuff just happens. It's just the NBA.
Right.
So I'm going to go 1-6 with the potential for two, like one, I think is a given. And I think there could be a potentially that second one where and Ayton combined for 50, you know, when they come back. Cause when they're healthy, man, you got, I mean, on paper, you got Ant, Grant, Brogdon, Sharp and Ayton. That's a formidable five. Like you better come to play.
It's not terrible.
Yeah. That five is going to go through that seven games and win a couple. because Ant's capable of going off. Grant's, you know, and they put it together on the same night where if someone else sits someone or someone has a bad night. And like I said, they just beat the Suns and the Kings, right? So I'm gonna say 2-5 just to be positive. That means 2-4. They've already lost one though. Damn. And they lost one with Durant, but they're okay. I guess it depends on how many guys they get back. See, I don't know. I can't say because I don't know when the other guys are coming back. I'm gonna say at least one. How about at least one? 1.5 is the over under, and I'm gonna go over if they get 5 games from Ant. How about that?
Yeah,
I'm breaking it down.
That's a lot of things there. I'm gonna take the under on 1.5.
If it doesn't snow in New York and the plane's on time, the
I would take the. I mean, they're gonna win one or two games, or I just don't want them to win zero because I do think at some point in time they're taking these games seriously, and I don't mean that like of course they are. I mean the young guys are taking it when. When the Blazers lose, you could see how upset Scoot and Kamara are. Like, they're not – and you could see the difference. And I'm not calling out Ayton here. I'm not calling him out on – but you could see the difference in their faces.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, on how it affects them. Ayton's like, I know how to win. You know, people might criticize me, but I was on a lot of – on the end of a lot of W's. And I know I can be on the end of a lot of W's. But the young guys, they haven't, right? And so – I don't know how that adds up and how that affects their growth. So that's why I think a win here and there, it helps their growth. I mean, you saw it against the Kings. It was like an NCAA game on the bench, you know, they were jumping up and they, you know, and going a little crazy. Like, so I want them to have more positive experiences so that they have more energy. Cause that's the truth. At every level, it doesn't matter who you are, winning, you know, helps with energy. Losing doesn't. Right. So, let's hope they get one and they're in a bunch of them. Because I do think again, when they're in the games and they're playing competitive basketball, two things: one, they get a lot more out of it, and two, we get a lot more out of it because the evaluations are real. Like it's hard to evaluate some of Scoot. When you're down 20 and he's scoring, you're like, yeah, who's he scoring against? Are they trying? You know, and so I hope the games are, you know, I'm hoping 4 of the games are competitive.
Fair. All right. Any concern about Aiden's knee?
That's my question to you. Yeah. Because I've been here long enough to have shared PTSD with Blazers big men who miss games because of knee injuries. And there hasn't been a lot of talk about whether or not it's a real issue that's ongoing or, you know, what have you heard?
I mean, it's knee tendonitis. Whenever I see him, he's walking around fine. He doesn't look like someone who's seriously injured. It's probably just been bothering him. I haven't really even worried about it much because guys have just been in and out of the lineup all season. So you're the first person to really raise the question in my presence about if this is something more serious than it's been let on to be. But yeah, I mean, if he misses the Dallas game, you know, I'll do some more poking around and sort of ask, you know, hey, what's going on here? Is this more serious than has been let on? But, you know, again, when he walks around the locker room, he seems fine. You know what I mean? Not fine. Like obviously, he's not playing because he's got an issue. But there's no limp. There's no, you know, he's not wearing anything. And these things happen with these guys in the NBA. Like, you know, knee soreness or something, you know, keeps him out for a few games, whatever. So I just haven't really been alarmed by it. But I will definitely take a closer look should he miss the Dallas game. You, however, seem concerned.
I just, you know, when a guy's out with knee soreness, tendonitis for multiple games, and they say he's out a day before, like I'm like, okay, at what point is it something that they're going to do an MRI on, or did they do an MRI and it's fine? Because then I'd like to know. That's all. I'm the people. Sometimes I'm the people, Ventress. So I got to ask the questions for the people. And I think there's some people that want to know when a Blazers big man who's, you know, like a big part of the future and the team has been missing, you know, now four games, and I think it's going to be five, and he missed a couple previously with the knee soreness. Like, hey, do I need to worry about this, or are we just kind of figuring why put wear and tear on the guy?
Right.
Which is, I'm fine with that. And then hopefully, and right now, we hope Simons will just be back sooner rather than later. And then we'll watch for what happens with Scoot's minutes in those games on the road. But no, I mean, the good news here is, other than the Williams injury, they've been, even Simons, his thumb came back faster than we thought. You know, it wasn't lingering, and now Sharp's back. So there hasn't been anything, and I don't want to jinx it, so I'm not going to say it out loud, but they've been game by game
doomed. Just doomed everybody. Good job, Craig. All right, so there was a big trade involving your Knicks.
Yeah, baby.
You want to break that down and compare it to what the Blazers maybe could have done?
Well, I just, you know, obviously, OG Anunoby had been rumored for a long time to be traded, and the Blazers kept coming up. At one point during, you know, in the Sharp draft, there was word that the Raptors wanted the 7 pick, and the Blazers weren't willing to give it up. And then multiple number ones, and maybe in the Lillard trade, there was that Raptors thing. So I was a little surprised. I think it's a trade that helps both teams based on salaries and contracts and needs, in the sense that the Raptors, I think they're either going full, full rebuild. Siakam might be on the way out, right? I mean, and they got a guard back in quickly. So the trade was OG and two NBA players, you know, backups, for RJ Barrett quickly and a second round pick. As a Knicks fan, I'm shocked that they didn't have to give up a first. Now it is a Pistons second round pick, so it's as close to a first round pick as you could get. You know, it's
okay, but explain this to me. What is the fascination with OG? Like, people act like he's Durant. He's 15 points a game.
Well,
he's a
good.
I'm just saying that. I mean, I'm exaggerating, but there's been all this talk about him being traded, and the Raptors wanted the world. And to me, Barrett and Quickly, like, Barrett's a legit starter, 20 point scorer, whose shooting has improved, and Quickly, you know, is a nice point guard.
It hasn't.
Huh? It hasn't?
It hasn't improved. It's tanked back.
Did it tank
back? It's the most inconsistent thing. Yeah, he just can't. I mean, he had one good year shooting where we're like, oh, it's like 37%. It's looking great.
And he began this year pretty well. Did he fall back? You would know better than me.
Yeah, he started great, good month, then bad month, terrible month. Shoots about 33% from three. His offensive efficiency numbers are terrible for a starter. And he makes close to $30 million. So that contract is big and long term. And he's only 23, and he's Canadian, so going back to Toronto is going to be great. And he hasn't been awful. He just hasn't been the what you need. And he's not a terrible defender, but he can't guard 1 through 4. And he is not a 3-and-D guy. And for the Knicks, Quickly plays the same position as their best player in Brunson, and he's a restricted free agent next year that's going to make big bucks. The Knicks were never going to re-sign him. They tried to extend him to a deal that would have worked salary-wise. He rejected it. Smart move on his part. He's going to make money because he deserves it. He's a really good player that might be a lead guard. Not quite a point guard. Good defender. Not strong like for every position, but a really good defender. But the thing with OG is that he what you're getting, which is an second team all defensive team last year. He can guard 1 through 4. He shoots 40% from three in the corners, which is, and he plays really, really hard. Question marks are his health. And yes, he averages everywhere from 19 to 15 because he's that kind of player. He doesn't care about scoring. and he's been on teams where, you know, they needed a scoring and he does it. He's rebounded terribly this year, but his numbers are usually better than where he's at now. And look, his first game, he had 17 and six, like, and hit a couple threes. So, and the Knicks beat Minnesota. So that's good. You know, if you're, you know, if you're evaluating game, one game, you're like, well, that's a great trade. It was perfect. But yeah, we talked about it. Siakam, we both said we'd give up a lot for Siakam. We wouldn't give up as much for OG. They're two different things. And I think what the Knicks gave up was more aligned with what you're getting, which is a really, really good two-way player. But I think that if the Raptors, if at any time the Blazers had offered that number seven pick, and they should have taken it. Now that I don't think the Blazers did. So, and
no, they did. That was in play,
right?
But they wanted way more. Toronto was being greedy.
They were, because I'd rather have, you know, if you're them right now, I'd rather have Sharp on a rookie contract,
right,
than RJ Barrett on that huge contract. And again, Barrett's not bad. He's just not a, you know, he's not elite end or at anything. And he needs to take a lot of shots. He needs the ball in his hand. That's why his efficiency numbers are really bad. So I think that NBA personnel, scouts, coaches, people that know, they think a lot of OG. And he's only 26.
Well, they didn't get the three first-round picks they wanted to, and they turned down Sharp. Imagine how the Blazers made that trade and gotten OG and Grant that offseason. They don't trade Dame. Well, one, they wouldn't have had a top five pick, so they wouldn't have ever been tempted by someone like Scoot.
Right. You might have won some games.
Right. So the entire landscape of this franchise would be totally different, and it would be interesting to see.
And you might not have traded Lillard.
No, that's my point. They wouldn't have traded Lillard at all.
Yeah.
Because they would have won. They would have been tempted to trade Lillard because they wouldn't have had the top five pick, which would have pissed off Lillard had they not, because they didn't trade it. That would have been a thing. He would have had OG and Grant.
Yep.
Right? It's possible you could have still flipped Nurkic, Little, and what have you to get Ayton.
Whew.
Yeah. And then,
that team's good.
That's good.
That's a good team.
That's a 51 team that's making noise in the West. But it didn't happen. So now the Blazers are going to be digging themselves out of a hole for the next few years, trying to get to the playoffs maybe by 2027, maybe? 4 or 5? Maybe this one. 26, maybe. Maybe 26.
Happy New Year!
We'll see. All right. Well, okay. So let me ask you this. So had they been able to trade Anthony and something for OG during the offseason, this last offseason, but OG wasn't available for that. Like, that wasn't, Toronto wasn't interested in that, which is fascinating because they ended up with Schroeder and now they got Quickly, but Ant and whatever wasn't good enough. It's just bizarre how they end up with this deal, whereas they could have done better trading with the Blazers and that would have changed the Blazers situation, because had they gone out and gotten OG and kept the third, well, and flipped the third pick too, with like, now, yeah, I mean, you're a really good basketball team moving forward with Dame. Instead, you're a bad basketball team hoping and praying that the youngsters work out. So,
yeah, I mean, I think this is more on Toronto than it is the Blazers.
Oh, yeah, I'm not blaming the Blazers at all. Toronto's being ridiculous.
Yeah, I just think it's interesting that how things change and sometimes waiting does, you know, we've been heard the word patience from two GMs, maybe more than that, but you know, that was Neil Olshey's thing, right? Like, gotta wait. You can't just rush it for the right deal. And then we have the new GM say, I'm going to throw all our chips in, and then go, well, I didn't see anything. So I had to be patient. You gotta be patient. Sometimes it does pay off. Cause I think the Knicks ended up, you know, getting OG at possibly, because they're going to re-sign him. That's the key, right? Again, he's an unrestricted free agent. So, I mean, he's got a player option that he's going to opt out because he's going to make more. So if the Knicks don't sign him, then it's a mess. This trade's a mess. But no one thinks he's not going to get signed because the president of the Blazers' son is his agent. So, like, you would think they might have had, you know, like, just passed the note at Thanksgiving. Like, hey, what do you think? So, collusion, whatever. Like, you know, how about the potatoes and OG? Like, you think it'll work? But I'm just saying, like, the Raptors thought they could compete, and they were a little afraid of maybe making a deal. And now they make the deal when they're 12-17 or whatever they were. But yeah, if you ask me, and I watch both these teams quite a bit, Simons or Quickley, who do I want? I want Simons. Like, it's not even close. I mean, he's offensively just so gifted. So I think that was the part that maybe won't ever know exactly, but the Raptors could really use a lead guard. That's why they went and got Quickley. So Simons would have been, it looks like, a really good fit with Siakam and what they have left. But yeah, now we wait, and again we speculate. And if OG walks and signs with the Pistons next year, the Knicks are going to be like, well, that was a bad trade. Let's sign Quickley back, who's a restricted free agent. So, I just thought it was interesting that guy finally got traded, because the Blazers, and with Siakam and OG, they've just been so many rumors. I thought it was worth mentioning, and of course, I got to talk about the Knicks. So there you go, win-win.
And everyone logged out at that moment. All right, anything else? Oh God, Craig's talking.
No,
about
I'm
the
good.
Knicks. He's breaking down Barrett and Quickley. What's that, honey? Oh yeah, I'll come do that. Honey, do list. Anyway. All right. So I'll be back from this trip on the 10th, and we can. There'll still be two games left, but we can recap it. And hope it's not that bad. But, wins and losses don't matter. We're looking for development, right?
It's all it's about.
It's all it's about. It's all it's about.
Baby steps. Literally, baby steps.
Literally, baby steps. All right. Thanks for listening to the Blazer Focus Podcast. Please click the subscribe button and give us a positive rating. And we will catch you on the other side.